Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teen Connect on WDIY. I'm your host, Yashvi Javia. I'm absolutely thrilled to be the newest host on Teen Connect. A little about me is that I'm a junior at Saucon Valley High School, interested in science, public affairs, and social media. Here on Teen Connect, we explore local to global issues impacting young people in our community, with conversations that connect experts in their respective fields with fellow teens to talk about the problems and perspectives they are confronting. By fostering conversations that bridge the gap between experts and teens, we aim to explore how teenagers can learn more about themselves and their complex minds. Emotional, behavioral, cognitive processes shape our teenage experience as we grow into the adult phase. That's exactly why I'm here with Jacqueline Otto, a certified therapist specializing in adolescent psychology, to decode the mysteries of the teenage brain. Jacqueline, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Yashvi. Thanks for having me on WDIY.
It's our pleasure. Now, could you please introduce yourself and share a bit about your line of work and education?
Sure. So like you said, my name's Jacqueline Otto. I'm the owner and therapist of On Track Counseling Services. We are located here in Bethlehem on the north side, right downtown. We offer individual sessions and some group events throughout the year. We don't have anything reoccurring, but we offer a variety of different group events that can be held. And we utilize some therapy techniques with all of our clients. So we utilize cognitive behavioral therapy, solution-focused therapy. We work with transitional ages. So I like to define that as any transition. So preteens, teens, high school to college, first year college students. And we additionally see individuals outside of that age range, but that's mostly, you know, the preteens, teens, transitional ages.
That's fascinating. Can you please explain some of the terms you mentioned, like cognitive behavioral therapy?
Sure. So cognitive behavioral therapy is also referenced a lot as CBT. It's one of the many therapies that exist. So some therapists have specific therapies they use, or maybe they use a collective amount of therapies. So it's pretty much focusing on helping people change ways of thinking, typically their unhelpful ways of thinking, feeling, and behaving. And it's really based on the idea that thoughts, feelings, sensations, actions are all connected. So CBT can definitely help people deal with any overwhelming problem and break it down into smaller parts or smaller steps that are more manageable. A lot of times with CBT, there's an emphasis on learning outside of the therapy room. So that might be an exercise, a goal, a homework assignment, something between sessions that they can work on to develop skills, develop coping strategies, and learn more about their thinking and emotions and behaviors.
What about solution-focused therapy?
That is more geared towards helping clients change by you work with them to come up with answers rather than focusing on the problem. So maybe you use SMART goal setting, which is specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely, breaking that down into smaller steps and coming up with answers that they can utilize and put in a place to help with a problem.
And as for emotional regulation, what role does emotion regulation play in the teenage life?
Yeah, so teenagers really start to learn how to regulate emotions. That's the time in our development where they're learning how to react appropriately, how to respond to an emotion in a manner that is socially acceptable and allows them to react in a way where they're going to be appropriate towards others and manage those feelings.
Thank you for clarifying that. So what sparked your interest in becoming a therapist, particularly focusing on teenagers?
This is an age range where I've always sort of had interest in. It's a tough age bracket. Transitional ages bring up a lot of stressful situations, so I like to be there as a support system for those age ranges because they're learning to emotionally regulate. It's also helpful when they're going through those developmental changes, such as puberty, to have support outlets outside of maybe family, close family, siblings, or friends. They want sort of this safe environment to talk to somebody about that.
That's amazing. Now, moving on to your private practice, you mostly work with teens and preteens, correct?
Yes, yeah, so that is correct. I primarily work with preteens, teens. I have a lot of adolescent ages, although I do see clients typically as young as kindergarten up to being an adult, any adult age.
Moving on to the brain itself, how does the teenage brain differ from the adult brain in terms of structure and function?
Great question. So the emotional part of the brain and decision-making center are still developing in adolescence. They say the brain fully develops around 25 years old. So for an adult versus a teenager, there's still a lot happening.
Oftentimes, many parents of teenagers wonder why their teen is so moody. Is this part of brain development or environmental influences?
I feel in my professional hat that it's both. It depends on the stressors they're experiencing, as well as the dynamic of their home, how they're learning to show emotion and regulate that. So for example, if they're in a household with someone and they react to a particular situation, they may mimic that in their outside environment. So I would say both.
So what are the key factors that influence brain development during adolescence?
A lot of it is things we do throughout our whole lifetime. So nutrition, sleep patterns, stress levels, social interactions, even genetics. So that kind of goes back to your other question. So genetics can definitely play a part in that too. Self-care and just the activities that they're in.
What about hormones and genetics? Do they interact to develop the teenage brain?
Yeah, so through puberty, the adolescent brain is going through a lot of changes. They're pouring out stress hormones, sex hormones, growth hormones, which in turn influence all of the brain development that's going on during that age range.
Jacqueline, could you please share some insight into your experience working with drug and alcohol counseling?
Sure, yeah. So I worked in an adolescent inpatient center, an outpatient center where adolescents attended weekly, multiple times a week. So my experience in drug and alcohol has mostly been with adolescents in facilities where they're there for 30 to 45 days, or they're there for like 3 to 12 weeks. And they work through group sessions, individual sessions, structured programming.
So what is the difference between individual sessions and group sessions in terms of the outcomes?
Yeah, so group sessions allows them to really hear feedback and ideas from other members of the group, where the counselor is leading that group. They might have a co-facilitator. They are there to provide psychoeducation and provide the dynamic of the group. But a group setting can be extra beneficial because the group members are providing their input or what they're hearing a client say to each other. And then they bounce ideas off of the other group members, or they provide them feedback. So that is different, where an individual session, you would be one-on-one with a therapist or counselor. The terms are pretty much used interchangeably. And you're working on your specific goals that you've outlined in a treatment plan.
What motivated you to become certified in drug and alcohol counseling, and how does this certification enhance your ability to support your clients?
I started in the drug and alcohol field, so not that I didn't want to be in that field, but that is where I started, and I did enjoy the rewarding part of that, so I continued on that path for a very long time, but more so started there, enjoyed what I did, and then versus now, you know, and how does this certification enhance your ability? I would say that I'm able to assess for different stages of use. So with adolescents, whether that's experimental, social, abuse, or dependence, that has helped me in my career.
What exactly is experimental abuse?
Yeah, great question too. So experimental abuse is the peer pressure type abuse. It's the abuse where you're curious, you've heard alcohol causes people to get drunk, you've heard marijuana is used by your friends, so maybe you are interested to see if those things that are being said are true and you're wondering about it. It, again, can be more a peer pressure thing, or it can just be that little voice in your mind that's like, hey, give this a try, see what happens. So you may just try it once and then you don't try it again. Maybe you try a couple substances once at each time. So it's more of those like maybe a party, maybe, you know, you're not following the rules of the house, you sneak out and you are offered it.
Do you think that experimental abuse is a growing problem in today's society?
I do, and I think it's always been present. So maybe it's talked about more now than before. Yeah, that's my initial reaction. I think it's maybe talked about more now than it has been in the past, but I don't know that it's any more severe or has increased more over time.
To add on to that, as a teenager myself, I often see certain shows normalizing and generalizing experimental abuse. So I think it's important to really discuss it and bring more awareness to it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a really good point. It's in many, many TV shows, series, movies. So we're seeing it. And then that can lend to the experimental part because you want to try it and see.
Could you please discuss some common challenges or issues you encounter when addressing substance abuse among teenagers, and how do you approach these challenges in your practice?
Yeah, so a lot of that really is when they are not appropriate for an outpatient setting. That's somewhere where you would come in one time a week or intensive outpatients a few times a week. So the challenge is really when they need a higher level of care and either the client and or their parent don't feel that that's the path that's best suited for them, and they don't necessarily want to get the level of care that would best help them, or the client refuses. So I think that approaching these challenges is just providing education to the parent and the client. If this isn't something that's addressed now, how it could become a bigger concern down the road.
Do you think there's a particular reason in why parents of the client don't refer to a higher level of care?
A lot of it, again, from my perspective, is stigma about drug and alcohol treatment, about being diagnosed with mental health diagnosis, having mental health symptoms, even though we are in 2024 and we've fought a lot of the stigma around those topics. It's still present, so they don't want to have to tell the school or tell their friends or tell family members that that's something that they had to explore. That would be one of my reasons.
And how do you tailor your counseling techniques or strategies when working with teenagers who are struggling with drug or alcohol issues?
Yeah, so drug and alcohol becomes the primary goal, more so than maybe managing mental health symptoms, because sobriety has to come before that in order to address other goals. So although the counseling techniques are similar, we're working on harm reduction, safety planning, resources in the community, resources within their family, collaborating with a team, pulling, you know, parents in, pulling maybe a sibling that they trust in. At that point, it's really safety and harm reduction.
Well, thank you so much for engaging in such conversations so far. You're listening to Teen Connect here on WDIY with our guest, Jacqueline Otto. We're going to take a short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Connect to WDIY with our streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
WDIY is Lehigh Valley Public Radio at 88.1 FM, also on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to Teen Connect. Tonight, we're talking about the mysteries of the teenage brain with Jacqueline Otto, a certified therapist specializing in adolescent psychology. In your opinion, what are some effective methods for raising awareness about the risks of drug and alcohol use among teenagers, both within families and within the broader community?
Overall, families need to talk about it to pretend that it's not a possibility to happen, not that it's absolutely a definite thing. Checking in, asking questions, especially at night or on weekends. You don't have to be totally involved in everything, but having conversation around it. DARE program was something like back in the day. I don't know if they do that at the schools anymore, but community resources in the Lehigh Valley are pretty available. They have done school programming from the community and they come into the school, but really conversation talking about it.
What are some of the unique challenges that teenagers face in terms of mental health?
So I'm unsure if this is unique, but social media is definitely something that has become more of a concern, whether that's an app like a social media app, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat is one of the ones that definitely is utilized by mostly everyone. It is a challenge because when you're at school, before, back in the day, you could leave school and those concerns or situations were left at school. Now it's with you 24/7. So social media, phone time, screen time, it really is definitely a concern.
So during teenage years, what is reasoning like?
So a lot of teenagers with reasoning skills such as impulsivity, they don't think through the situation, the behavior to get to what a potential consequence may be. A lot of teenagers have that invincible feeling, that's not going to happen to us. I'm not going to get in this car and not be able to make it home safe. We don't have those skills developed yet where we're able to really think about it before going through an action and be like, this is a consequence that could result from this, and I need to keep myself safe and everybody else safe. So impulsivity and not thinking through.
Do you think parental influence or peer influence plays more of a role during teenage years?
Both. Parent influence could depend on the dynamic of the family. So if parents are co-parenting, that is a huge dynamic depending on roles in one location or house versus the other home. Even if your parents are in the same home, that could also be like a good cop, bad cop situation. How is discipline handled? What does going out on the weekends look like? What's curfew? And again, like talking about it in the conversation, like are those conversations being had with peers? There's the peer pressure again, peer influence. You're also, as an adolescent, figuring out characteristics or qualities that you want in friendships, whether those are positive characteristics and qualities or negative. You sometimes form friendships and then those friendships end and you find new friends. So I'm going to say both.
So what is the key to positive parent and teen relationships?
It's really important as an individual to think about those qualities. Like I just said, you know, what are you looking for? What's important to you? What would you want in a friend? What do you provide to your friendships so that you're building a support system of positive peer influence? It's not that everything has to go perfectly all the time in friendships, but that you're building a support where you can reach out to them if you need help. They're there for you as much as you are there for them. And with parents, they are your parent. So there may be specific things that they put in place in the relationship as parent-child. And also knowing that they've been teenagers before too. So you can go to them and talk to them or go to another adult too, maybe at school or a family member.
So moving on to educators, how can they best support teenagers as they navigate through the challenges of school and adolescence?
Check in. You know, sometimes at school, teachers are quick to say the assignment's late, you were late to school, you're falling asleep in school. Really just start out by being person-centered to be there for the student, to check in with them like, hey, this isn't typical. What's going on today? What support do you need? How can I help you? Most schools have school counselors or guidance counselors. So also as an educator, being able to provide that resource to a student and say, hey, like you can utilize the school counselor. That's what they're here for.
So what are some effective strategies for helping teenagers manage stress and anxiety?
Self-care is the big one. Having downtime when you do get home from school or after sports or other extracurricular activities, having downtime before a bedtime routine. Bedtime routines, wake-up routines is really important too as an effective strategy to have consistency in your schedule. That's, I know, hard sometimes, what time you go to bed, what time you wake up, depending on homework and, again, outside activities after school. But really doing whatever self-care that is for you, whether it's binge-watching a show, a movie, breathing, resting, getting movement. Exercise is a huge one. So it really comes down to those coping outlets that you find are most effective for you as an individual.
So why is getting sleep so important during these teenage years?
Yeah, sleep's important all the time, I think, for anyone, especially for teens, because there are long days. They're in school a lot of days or a lot of hours out of the day, a lot of hours out of the week. And it's really important to rest and feel re-energized, like our cup empties throughout the day. So we really have to fill that. And sleep is important. That kind of ties back into the social media stuff with the phone and being able to have breaks and be able to sleep and have good sleep.
How can teenagers develop healthy coping mechanisms for dealing with difficult emotions?
Coping mechanisms could be like counting, breathing, meditation. Again, it could be working out or self-care time. So you just have to practice them and really make them part of your routine, whether that's setting an alarm as a reminder or adding it to your schedule, making time for it and practicing them for sure.
Moving back to phone use and social media, what are some tips you have to really get some downtime off your phone, especially as a teenager, in which screen times can be very high?
Yeah, so some of my clients have taught me some savvy things with the phones, setting limits on certain apps, putting on do not disturb, starting at a certain time, leaving your light down low at night. Sometimes having like an alarm, just like an alarm clock as an alarm, is helpful because you can plug your phone in and leave it further away from your bed. You can have a noise machine that plugs into the wall. So if there's things on your phone that help with nighttime routine and relaxing at night, trying to think about if you can disconnect that from your phone to be its own entity so you don't need your phone readily available by your bedside.
How can we promote positive brain development during adolescence?
Being educated, if we're educated and staying on top of being educated, because brain development is pretty, you know, biologically set, but there's things in the counseling world that are always changing, and providing a safe environment for growth. If adolescents don't feel safe or a calmness or feel like they can open up, it might not be promoted because they're being filled with stress and anxiety and other emotions.
Do you think it's better to have teenagers bottle up their emotions or let others around them know?
It's really important to have a support system. So it's really important to let others around you know. And that might look different depending on the situation. So if you're experiencing something with a peer at school, maybe that outlet for you is the guidance counselor. Maybe sometimes, depending what you're feeling, you'd go to a friend, or other times you go to a parent or a family member. So there are times where maybe you can't let emotion out if you're in the middle of an exam or you're in the middle of a game, but making sure that you do process that as soon as you can to not bottle it up.
As we're finding one's identity during their teenage years, what tips do you have for teens to really understand how to find their identity?
So finding your identity is making sure that you recognize and understand that everybody is their own person. Everybody's their own individual. There's a lot to find about yourself. And sometimes that might not even happen by 18 and your adolescent years. That might go into early adulthood. But knowing that a lot of pieces go into that, who you are, your personality, your sexual orientation, your gender identity, all of that is part of who you are.
What exactly is gender identity?
Gender identity is how you identify as a gender to you. So that might not be the same as biological birth gender, but gender identity is how you see yourself and how you feel you are wanting to represent yourself in the world.
As for dealing with LGBTQ and sexual orientation, what tips do you have for teenagers who are struggling with their sexual orientation and gender identity?
They can talk to somebody they trust. Sexual orientation includes a lot of things. And as a teenager, we may not even have dated yet, or we might not even have had our first kiss. So sexual orientation includes a lot of different avenues of who we are attracted to as an individual and what that looks like as we develop through those years. So that is like a pretty large topic, and it's not always an easy answer, but reaching out for support and talking about it with a trusted individual is really important.
For those who don't know, what is the difference between homosexuality and heterosexuality?
So homosexuality would be dating somebody who identifies as the same gender, and heterosexuality would be somebody from a different gender. So again, you know, sexual orientation and gender identity are two different categories. So that can get a little confusing. But as far as those terms, it would be male to male, female to female.
And to clarify, what is the difference between gender and sex?
So gender would be male, female. It can also include transgender. Where sex could be asexual, homosexual, heterosexual, pansexual. There's a lot of different spectrums that could be its own podcast for sure.
What can we do as a community to provide a safe environment for LGBTQ plus members?
There's been a lot of great movement in providing safe environments, such as gender neutral bathrooms, providing the first name that they would like to be called by, so people can be very open about their preferred name or the name that they want to be called. There's also a lot of movement with gender pronouns, so you'll see that a lot in email signatures, on LinkedIn. A lot of people are doing it, so that's becoming a more known thing that's catching on, so that you don't necessarily need to ask someone their pronouns, but that's there so that when you're addressing any emails or anything on social media, you can identify the person in the way that they want to be identified.
My last question is, what advice do you have to teenagers listening to build a mentally healthy lifestyle to deal with the daily stresses of school, relationships, and finding their identity?
Definitely finding a good balance that works for you, whether that's through time management or having a way to manage your schedule. It's also really important when there's stressors to build a support system. We've talked a lot about those support systems today, people you can build rapport with, people that you can trust. You should have multiple people in your support system versus having only one outlet. So in case that one outlet isn't available or isn't around, you have many people to go to.
Well, thank you. Lastly, where can listeners go to learn more about your counseling?
So there's a few ways that they can do that. The name of the counseling is On Track Counseling without the C. So it's ONTRAK Counseling. We have a website. We are on Instagram and Facebook. You can always email us from the website to reach out and contact us via phone too.
Well, thank you, Jackie, for taking the time to be with us today. It's been fascinating to learn about your counseling experiences, and it was a pleasure to talk with you about your line of work.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much to our listeners for taking the time to listen to us today. You can also find past episodes and other public affairs programming at wdiy.org and on major podcast platforms. I'm Yashri Javia, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM. We'll see you next time on Teen Connect.